This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Hey, my cat-loving friends. I am back with a new episode of the 19 Cats and Counting Reboot. You will love the guests we're going to talk to in just a few minutes. But I just want to say one thing to you guys. My birthday was last week, and as you know, my parents were passed away. This is my first birthday alone. And you guys, your outpouring of care and support on social media, sending me private messages, I can't tell you how much I appreciated it. It was a tough day. So back on a positive note, we're going to hear from our sponsors in just a moment, and then we'll be back with our wonderful guest, Dr. Ezra. We'll be right back.
You know the expression, cats have nine lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations, too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
So we're back now with 19 Cats and Counting here on Pet Life Radio. I'm your host, Rita Reimers, Certified Cat Behavior Trainer. We're here with Dr. Ezra, I have a hard time with his last name, who is owner, founder of a veterinary practice, Paw Priority in Los Angeles, which I wish was there when I lived there. Emergency vet experience, you name it, he's got it. So let's just go right to Dr. Ezra. Welcome to the show. I'm so happy to have you here.
Hi, Rita. Thanks so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
So tell us a little bit about your practice and why you started Priority. There's so many veterinarians in Los Angeles.
It's a great question. So, you know, I've been an emergency doctor for about a decade now. 10 years ago, I graduated. And I would work at different hospitals all over the place. I would do emergency and I would do general practice. And over the years, one thing that I just became like super apparent to me, every place that I would go to, is this corporate kind of vibe. And it's something that's been growing since I graduated, that more and more hospitals are becoming corporate. And there's so many levels of impact that has on a veterinarian when there's quotas and there's different people behind you that are kind of recommending, hey, you actually should be, you know, doing more of this test. You should be actually seeing this many patients. And it's completely changed the quality of medicine across the board in the profession. So a few years ago, I moved to Los Angeles and I said, I got to open up my own place. I've always wanted to open up my place and I want to make it fully independent. And it's meant to be an urgent care that's somewhere in between your regular vet, who's a lot of times stressed and can't see you on an average day for vomiting starting at 3 p.m. or something like that, and the ER, which has this new 6 to 8 hour wait where there's an ER vet that's completely stressed out in an absolute rush to get you in and out of there as quickly as possible. And so my practice is supposed to be that urgent care that's right in between the two, that we can see you for a scheduled or unscheduled emergency and actually give you the time of day and talk to you about all the options and give a good bedside manner.
Well, that's awesome. Like we were talking a little bit before we started recording here. A lot of times those kind of veterinarians, those emergency vets on the weekends, know they see something that looks a little bit serious. Right away, they're so quick to suggest euthanasia. Why is that?
Oh, it's a tough one. Okay, so there's going to be a generous answer. And there's going to be sometimes a realistic answer. And the generous answer is there's a lot of older pets that are pretty sick these days. And the cost of some of these treatments has skyrocketed. You know, these hospitalizations, when I graduated 10 years ago, the same hospitalization that used to be $2,000 to $3,000 can now in Los Angeles be $5,000 to $10,000. And I kid you not about that. It has become a scary idea. And so for some of these serious issues, as an emergency doctor walking around, you're about to hit a person with an estimate like that for a mid-level problem that could be a very serious issue if we don't get this corrected. Let's say an obstructed cat or something like that. And a lot of people are going to say off the bat, holy crap, that's too much money. I can't do anything. And for that, you have to be able to be balanced and say, okay, you know, like if we can't do that, here's another thing. So we're stuck into it. We're stuck because of the price of some of this medicine that every vet is kind of geared to be able to offer that. The less charitable answer, and you know, like even in my own mind, if you're in an absolute rush, it used to be that you could sit down with somebody and literally go through every single option and try to make like three or four options. And you say, okay, here's the perfect world. I really like to hospitalize. I really like to do all of this, these diagnostic tests and blood work, and we got to figure out what's going on. And then we could try, okay, I could just maybe do this test and we'd run this and it would take an hour or two and I'd come back and we'd talk again. And then maybe we could try this treatment or this treatment or this treatment. And then option three, you know, if all else fails, we got an older cat and he's really, really sick. And, you know, the prognosis isn't looking good from what I'm seeing. And I'm worried that it's this and this would not be great. And then let me give you that option for euthanasia. And nowadays, being an emergency vet, I used to do overnights where people were waiting 6-8 hours to see me. It's really, really challenging to sit there and actually have that conversation because at some of these end of these shifts, you're sitting there for 2 or 3 hours of doing paperwork. And so if I'm sitting there and talking to people for an extra half an hour, that's maybe another extra half an hour and we'll get home. And so part of this non-charitable answer is we're in just such a rush to do everything that we're thinking so fast that we're probably hitting people like a ton of bricks and only giving two options when realistically we should be trying to flesh out something in between. So that's my charitable and non-charitable answer about that.
I'm very lucky. My veterinarian, I live in a very small town. Y'all listeners know that. And he does take the time. But you'll also know the saga of Oliver. By the way, Oliver did end up passing away.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, he's a great kitty. But my vet wasn't open. So I went to a different veterinarian. And, you know, he read the numbers and said, okay, we have to euthanize him. He didn't give me any options. I didn't euthanize him. I went to my vet. And they spent a week, you know, observing him and giving him all kinds of high dosages of antibiotics and fluids. And he survived. And he did survive at home for a few weeks, but he just had lost too much weight. He couldn't put it back on. But here's the thing. I went to a different vet. There was nobody else at the vet's office at all. I was the only one there still. Quick to recommend euthanasia, right? It's a very emotional thing for us pet parents to be told that.
I don't know. And I can tell you, bedside manner is a lost art completely in veterinary. We somewhere along the way became diagnostic machines that don't necessarily see people as people. You know, we see them as you're a client. I'm going to give you your information. I'm going to give you your choices. And the emotional aspect is completely lost. It's devoid of that. And if you do this, these ER shifts where you're seeing multiple things an hour for 12 hours on end, you're just emotionally exhausted at all times. Like that to me, part of the answer why we've lost it in profession, we've completely lost that.
I always say to my vet, especially when we have to euthanize one of my pets, I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you guys. My vet said he thinks of it as, you know, of course it's a compassionate choice. He's doing a favor for the pet, for the dog or cat, but it's still very emotional on him. And I've seen him close to tears at times.
It's hard because you do a job effectively. You have to be able to kind of push your emotions aside to be there. Because if I was a blithering mess at all times, I'm not sure I would help people ever. But there has to be that humanizing aspect there. I think of it as helping in a different way. I really am. This is my belief, is that I wish people sometimes had these options.
It's, you know, true. Yes.
Something that is, you know, causing pain on a daily basis. It's a disease that's not improving, that's only seeming to trend in the wrong direction or continuously getting worse. I don't want, you know, it to be a quantity of life. I want it to be a quality of life. And that's how I think about euthanasia. At times, I want to be able to say goodbye to a pet when it's a good time and not when they're just in horrendous shape or in an emergency and having trouble breathing and all that kind of stuff. And so I think of death sometimes as inevitability and trying to make sure their victory lap is handled I call the victory lap, you know, the last few weeks, months, or years of a pet's life is handled in the best way possible. And when they tell us that they're ready to go, we believe them and we want to help them. That's the way I think about it.
I've been through so many losses. I recognize the signs. Oliver was not telling me it was time to go. And we lost 2 days of medication. I think he might have made it had a couple more days. I agree with you. You know, I wish my dad ended up passing 5 weeks after my mom. Long story short, he had liver cancer and he really suffered that last week of his life. I wish we'd had that option so that I can go more quietly with dignity.
And I go over this with people as well too, that, you know, they pets can't think of the future like we think of the future. You know, for a person, they go, oh man, I just really hope I make it to Christmas. And then we will have one more Christmas with the family and we'll have these memories and we'll have the pictures. And pets just can't think of the future.
No.
All that exists is the present tense. And so if they're unhappy for any given period of time, it's not the same. It's worse.
Yeah. I know this is kind of becoming a little downer, but
I'm sorry. I promise I can make things happier.
No. I mean, this is something that needs to be talked about, though. I mean, everybody who has a pet, dog, cat, gerbil, whatever, goes through this at some point in their life. And some of us who have a high number of pets, like me, go through it a lot more often.
Ironically, you know, like I sometimes think of this as the happiest part of a pet's life, because you're basically thanking them for a lifetime of a friendship, to allow you to say a black and better word.
Oliver was 15. He wasn't like a youngster. So he had a good long life. It's just never long enough.
It's kind of like a nice time that like we're just reminiscing. It's like a nostalgic phase that you get together and it's a victory box.
So I want to talk more about your practice when we come back. We have to take a quick break for a sponsor, but we'll be right back and I've got a lot more questions for you. We'll be right back.
As your dog or cat chewed through yet another set of sheets?
I get it. I've been there. But instead of replacing them with more scratchy, low-quality bedding, why not treat yourself to what Oprah and Kris Jenner sleep on every night? It's called Cozy Earth. And yes, it's as dreamy as it sounds. Their bamboo sheets and pajamas are buttery soft, cooling, moisture-wicking, and they actually get softer every time you wash them. I'm talking next-level snuggle mode here, folks. These sheets have been on Oprah's Favorite Things list 7 years in a row, and there's a reason why. Cozy Earth gives you the softest, coolest sleep of your life. And just for Pet Life Radio listeners, I scored you an exclusive 41% off. That's the biggest discount they offer anywhere. Just use promo code PETLIFERADIO at CozyEarth.com and sleep like the celebrity your pet already thinks you are. That's CozyEarth.com, promo code PETLIFERADIO. You'll thank me at bedtime.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
And we are back with 19 Cats and Counting here on Pet Life Radio. I am your host, Rita Reimers, cat behavior trainer. I'm here with Dr. Ezra, and we're talking about his fabulous new practice in Los Angeles, Paw Priority. Tell us a little more about your practice. Are you just emergency or are you also the primary veterinarian for some people?
Great question. So I have always done emergency medicine. Okay. My background is all pretty much emergency right out of vet school. I did 2 internships in specialty hospitals and just started working in specialty hospitals. So I love emergency. So that's always what I wanted to do, is I just get excited about helping people with emergency cases, you know, and vomiting and diarrhea and any kind of issue, just helping them through that. That's my favorite stuff.
And when we're a basket case, right?
Lack of a better word, it's hot. I say this and like I can walk my way through logically through some of these problems, but when these things happen to my own, I get, you know, stressed out and emotional at times. Like, I'm not a person who's completely unable to be stressed out like everybody else.
Of course.
So my practice is mostly urgent care. But when I moved to LA and I started practicing at different practices, I found a lot of people just hated the corporate atmosphere of wherever they were, or the lack of one vet seeing them over and over again that they had a relationship with and like actually could ask questions to. And so when I opened this practice, people asked me, like, could I do primary care and like wellness and vaccines so they could just follow up with one person over a consistency over and over and over. And I said, absolutely, of course. So we do urgent care. And then inside of our urgent care, we have like our own like little primary general practice. So we'll do wellness and vaccines and wellness exams and wellness blood work and routine stuff and obstetrics and all that kind of stuff. And then the third thing that we do that I'm very, very passionate about is acupuncture as well, too.
Yes, I want to talk about that. I was mentioning to you off the air that it was about 15 years ago, my mom had a dog that had some issues with pain in his hindquarters. And back then, acupuncture was kind of like out there. There was one doctor in the Charlotte area who did it, Dr. Presley. And my mom took the dog there, even though it was a 45-minute trip out there. But it was pretty radical back then. Has it become a little more mainstream?
You bet it has. I mean, even when I was at school in Minnesota, there was an acupuncture service. The funny thing is, like, the general mindset, even of most of the clinicians that were there, is that acupuncture is out there, or snake oil, or, you know, like, just really hippy dippy or something like that. And what I can tell you is, and like, I did, honestly, about 6 years of practicing medicine where I thought that. I literally thought myself. And as I started practicing, I started realizing that there's a lot of these older animals that start having a lot of issues getting around, okay? Like back issues, hip issues, knee issues. And oftentimes, especially with cats, you're throwing them multiple medications, which I'm not, you know, the biggest fan of keeping animals on the maximum medication for long periods of time to do these things. And I started feeling like, okay, there's got to be something I can do here that doesn't feel like that. That doesn't make me feel like a drug salesman. And I started looking into acupuncture and realizing that it's not, you know, like a snake oil. It is exactly the opposite. It is a provable, useful thing, okay? It's provably useful. But to me, for that wheelhouse of where it's provably useful is these orthopedic back or hip issues, all right? And the reason it's easily provably useful is they do studies where you can see that it's introducing blood flow to areas that need it. And it's hitting these large alpha fibers that are non-painful, but are distracting pain from a place that needs it. And so you've got these older animals where you're actually improving them by doing acupuncture in a way that hopefully you can use less whatever, you know, Onsior or steroids or whatever you're giving to these cats that might be having an effect over time. Now you could do something that absolutely, at worst, innocuous, and at best, seems to really, really help them.
Does it help with arthritis at all?
You bet it does. Oh my God. And that to me is the number one issue that I'm seeing. And I'm definitely seeing many more dogs than cats, but we do have quite a few cats that come into us for arthritic issues or Heimlich issues. Even sometimes if you see those cats with the thrombus where they kind of lose control of their back legs.
Yeah. Wow.
We're doing the same thing. We're inserting needles in areas that are trying to introduce more blood flow. So you bet arthritis is probably the main issue that I'm doing it for. And it is no longer a fringe part of veterinary medicine. Okay, there's one large school called Qi University. Well, I went and I did my CE. That's just for veterinarians just interested in getting into acupuncture. And they're graduating hundreds of vets every year because vets are seeing this. They're seeing the studies. And it's believable. And once again, like I'm not a giant fan. You can take it very, very literally, like religion in any particular way. You can take it very literally and you can say, okay, well, there's this liver meridian and a gallbladder meridian and a heart meridian, and I can treat those kind of problems with it. I feel less strong about internal issues with this, but I feel very strong about musculoskeletal issues that I can make it much better by doing acupuncture.
I know there's like a shot. I won't mention the name you can give your cat once a month. But what a pain to have to bring the cat in once a month. And again, I'm not a big fan of long-term medication unless it's absolutely necessary. But in my behavior practice, I do see some instances where a cat is in pain. Maybe the other cat or dog will jump on him and then fights start. So sometimes the disagreements between pets are because of the pain they're having. But do you have to put the pets out to give them the acupuncture, or are they awake?
Absolutely not. They are fully awake, and oftentimes... Yeah. The funny thing is, it depends on the cat. Some cats who wouldn't like to be at the vet anyways probably wouldn't appreciate it. But the funny thing is, like, I find like sphinxes are like one of the most common cats that I see. And they're just easy going. They actually love it. You know, they love the attention and like the personal time.
I could
so
see that.
They will usually, and like big dogs are so easy to do. They're just wagging their tail the whole time. But I find a lot of these cats actually love it as well too. I do not sedate him for it. I would actually say that I'm almost undoing what I'm doing by having to sedate them for it. You know, if it's a cat that would be stressed out to be in hospital, and I have to give them a sedation in order to do acupuncture, I would argue that I might not be doing, you know, that there's a right treatment and a right cat for everything. And I would argue that might not be so helpful. So yeah, if I have an angry cat and I have to sedate them and do acupuncture, I probably wouldn't. What the cat I'm looking for, the nice, easygoing one, that can benefit without me having to throw them a ton of drugs in order to do it.
Sure. Yeah, because I would think you need them awake to, I don't know, because I've not experienced it, but I would think you need them to be awake so you can see their reactions when you're hitting certain spots with the acupuncture. Is that true?
Not necessarily. In fact, a lot of these guys, the depth that we're going to is extremely minimal. We're still introducing new blood flow in their areas by doing that, but we're not going to a huge depth. So no, they actually, a lot of these guys, they just start like lying down and purring kind of thing, and they don't even notice the needles going in. That's the whole hope.
They just know the pain's going away, right?
You bet. They're getting distracted, and usually they're getting pets at the same time. The owner's always there right in front of them.
Treats.
So the hope is they're not even like realizing when these needles are going in. And I wish I could I could show you that they're just, you know, like just relaxing. They don't even seem to mind it. And I have to say, this is very different from humans because, look, we got this thin skin here. This is all we have.
Yeah, I'm scared of needles.
and when we do it in us, we're always, all we have is thin skin and then either bone or muscle and lots of nerves. And we are hitting things that seem to be painful. And like, you know, when I did acupuncture, I sometimes had to like breathe my way through it. And I can tell you with animals, their skin is much thicker and they're feeling it a lot less. So I think it's actually more beneficial than in animals, than even in humans, for sure.
That sounds great. And I guess it depends on what they're being treated for, how many sessions it takes for the pet, the cat or dog, to see relief.
It's variable like anything else. I mean, someone who loves acupuncture would argue that twice a week is the optimal amount. But I have to be honest with people that, you know, it adds up. And so if we can do that once a week or we can do it once every couple of weeks, we're still helping the patient, you know? At first, year twice a week is great if people can do it. We have plans where we, like, you know, have discounts if we're doing, like, multiple sessions and stuff like that. But even sometimes just a one-off here and there is very reasonable.
I would think pet insurance covers that. I guess it depends on the policy, though.
The irony is a lot of times it does. And that insurance in America is the greatest example of, you know, they should be tight with all of their money. They are tight with all their money. And the fact that insurance covers veterinary acupuncture in a lot of instances tells you even they believe that it really, really helps these guys, you know?
That's so awesome. Yeah.
But, and like, they should be the last place where, you're getting acupuncture? No, we don't believe. They should be the last people to want to pay for it. And they do readily in veterinary. So that says a lot.
Yeah, I think back when my mom was taking the dog, it wasn't covered. Pet insurance wasn't even very popular back then like it is now. But that's a whole nother conversation.
And like pet insurance has theoretically even maybe gotten worse, I would say, you know, in the past 10 to 20 years. And still, they're very, very generous with acupuncture treatment. Yeah.
So this is all such wonderful information, and I hope you'll come back. Do you have any last words for us about anything we've spoken about today, or is there something you want to say that we haven't touched on?
My last words are what I always talk about with people. Like literally when people sit in an exam room, I introduce myself. And the part that I always try to get to people about my practice and me and veterinary's profession is my concern with the rising corporatization of the whole profession. I really, 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 really believe strongly in the independent vet and the value of the independent. And corporates are great at making branding and they're great at making things organized and making a customer experience seem faster or easier or simpler. But when it comes to the quality of medicine that you will get in an independent practice, it is infinitely better. And the amount of attention that I can give people without my own brain saying, oh my God, well, I really should push these guys to do a fecal, or I really should push these guys to do this, or, oh, we got to do the dental. I need to reach my quota of dentals. I don't have to do that because I'm an independent vet. I run my own place. And so I make recommendations based upon what I think. And my whole goal is not to make as much money this year as I can, but rather to have a practice that's still here in 20 years. So what I would say to people is definitely, definitely, definitely think about independent vets. It's definitely okay to go in and ask, who owns this clinic? Is the veterinary who owns this clinic here? Where are they? They're not here. Okay. When do they come back? How often are they here? These are like very reasonable questions that especially an independent vet will appreciate. And there's something called the silent buyout that a lot of these older vets who used to be independent all of a sudden sell to a mid-sized corporate and things change dramatically. And sometimes they can tell you and sometimes they can't tell you. But I always tell people to be cognizant of that too, because that's just a corporate vet in another clothing kind of thing. So definitely try to find an independent vet who owns a place who's always there.
I'm very lucky. Faulkner's Animal Hospital here in Lancaster, owned by Dr. Faulkner, who has since retired, but he comes back if they are overloaded. He'll come back and help out.
That's a good vet right there.
I know. He's awesome. The thing too is you want to be able to see the same vet or vets. You know, go to some of these larger corporate structure. You don't see the same person, can't even ask for the same vet. You just see who you see. And there's no continuity of care that way, I don't think.
As a vet, you get, you know, before I walk into an exam room, when I used to work more so obviously at like corporates and stuff like that, and I worked at all kinds of like mid-level hospitals, emergency hospitals, chains that are, I won't mention the specific names, but think about the two largest vet hospital companies in the United States, and I've worked with them. As a vet, you might get 30 seconds to 45 seconds to review a chart. And on a 12-year-old or 13-year-old cat, that chart might be 50 or 100 pages over 10 to 12 years of blood works, of this, of that. You might be on 5 different treatments. And if you're a vet just walking in for the first time, you get 30 to 45 seconds to get a sense of what's going on before you walk in the room and you talk to the person, then you might have 20 minutes. And that's the antithesis of good medicine. Because if there's no consistency, like I can't tell you the amount of times that I go, wait a second, weren't you guys here for that same thing last time? Did that drug that we used work or it didn't work? Oh, he had trouble with that drug. We should not use that again. I remember now he's got this diabetic issue. So if you're not able to do that with people and you're not able to have any consistency of a vet, don't expect good medicine out of it. You know, you need that consistency to have good medicine.
I agree. I've been lucky. I've seen mostly all independent veterinarians. But now I'm going to worry, you know, so how do you know if it's been taken over by corporate? I mean, can you ask? You don't really know. I mean, I know in my case, it's not been, but.
You can ask, and you should ask, is what I would say to people. There are sometimes like very, very obvious chains. BCA and Banfield would be two very, very obvious chains that you know it's a corporate practice. And then there's some kind of mid-sized corporates that what they do is they like to buy a practice, but they like to keep everything the same, or at least make it seem like everything's the same. And it's challenging to know if they own those because they might be under contract to not say that they are now owned by a corporate because they don't want a giant exodus of clients. So the best you can sometimes do is ask who owns this place. And, you know, like sometimes the answer is, this doctor used to own it or something like that. And you get a feeling for the place. But long story short, you know, for a veterinarian who owns a practice, they're generally there 4 or 5 days a week. They're generally the ones you would always talk to. And there's a lot less formality sometimes. If you call and say, hey, can I speak to your vet or can I speak to my about this particular problem? They're probably much more happy to get on the phone with you than a corporate.
It's true. Yeah,
and
it's true.
The one thing that sometimes stinks of a corporate is a different vet every single day from a family practice. If there's a different guy there every single day and they're not there more than once or twice a week, that's a little strange. Like, you know, there's very few practices that can have a person there just once a week, just hanging out and they run the place.
Yeah. It's different vet every time. They're not going to go back to pages and pages. You should see my file because I have so many cats. It's like this thick, right? So they're not going to go back pages and pages, but you see the same vet. They were, like you said, they remember what's going on. I'm shocked that my vet remembers so much.
These days, sometimes as a vet, you have to put it into ChatGPT. I'm not even kidding you. And like, please summarize this as best as you can in 2 or 3 minutes so I can try to understand as best possible because I don't have the time to read these 50 pages right now. You know, I'm already going to be here 2 hours doing notes. I can't be here 3 hours late doing this. So yeah, it's consistency matters.
Love ChatGPT, by the way.
Yeah, me too. I'm a big AI guy.
Oh my gosh. Well, I hope you come back again. If you are in the Los Angeles area, go to paulpriority.vet. Check out their website. Make an appointment. If I was still in LA, you'd be seeing my 16 cats.
I would be happy to see all 19 cats and counting.
Yeah. Down, unfortunately, but you never know what the future will bring me. So we'll just keep the count 19. We make it back there someday. I hope not. Anyway, so I want to thank you, Dr. Ezra, for enlightening us about acupuncture and private veterinarians versus corporate. That was really important. I don't think a lot of people think about that. I know I didn't. Of course, I want to thank Mark Winter for giving me this spot on Pet Life Radio and for letting me have that hiatus so I could reorganize, get through some of that hard stuff in my life. And of course, I want to thank everybody who's listening, who's come back to the 19 Cats and Counting Reboot. And I want to tell you all, don't forget,
every day is Catter Day. We'll see you on the next episode.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.